A big thanks to our friends at TiVo for sponsoring this week's episode of the Daily Brief podcast. TiVo's Promo Optimizer is a cloud-based tool that allocates and executes your promotional inventory across network brands. Check it out at business.tivo.com. TiVo knows promos.
I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. This is exciting. Can you feel this is TV's highest honors? Us celebrating us. Tonight, we binge ourselves. Well, what a year it has been for television. I mean, the industry is booming. There were over 450 original scripted shows made this year. Of course, there's no way anyone could possibly watch that much TV other than the president, who seems to have a lot of time for that sort of thing. Hello, sir. Thank you for joining us. Looking forward to the tweets. And there have never been more platforms to get your TV than right now. You have broadcast. You have cable. You have Amazon. You have YouTube. Hulu, Vudu, Netflix, Vitamix. You have Vimeo. You have Twitch. You have Crackle, Crunchle, Bumble, Twerk, Glorp, Flurp, Uber Eyeball, and DintyMoreStew.com. Oh yes, it's gonna be in the trades tomorrow. Dinty Moore has a 10-episode deal with Martin Scorsese. Rumor is, Liev Schreiber is playing a brooding chunk of meat. Just like that, but with carrots and potatoes around him. Broadcast TV also had its triumphs this year. Remember Broadcast? The TV OG? Where it started? Broadcast TV is breaking new ground. In fact, this season, CBS will have twice as many Sheldons as any other network in history. Incredible.
Hello, I'm Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, I have the privilege of talking with my dear friend and former editor, Robert Rourke, TV columnist for the New York Post. We're going to talk about the 69th annual Primetime Emmys, which aired last night. So hello, Robert, and welcome.
Thank you, Paige. It's so nice to see you and talk to you again.
I know, unfortunately, I cannot see you, but it is very nice to talk to you.
I feel I can see you.
All right. So first of all, what did you think of Stephen Colbert as the host?
I liked him in the beginning. I didn't like at all his steak interview with RuPaul. I thought it was pandering. And I didn't understand the Westworld segment and what that was really about. I just didn't get it.
I liked the Westworld segment. I thought the RuPaul thing could have been funnier. In general, though, I feel with Colbert, I think this with all the late night hosts, but he's just such a consummate pro.
Correct.
So in that sense, I think he was good. I did hear some pushback that there were too many anti-Trump jokes, but I feel like...
There were many.
There were many, and that room loves them. But I also feel like that's what Colbert does. That's why his ratings are up. So it shouldn't really surprise anybody that that's what he did here.
Correct. But I do think that if hot people in Hollywood expect Americans to keep watching their shows just to hear a bunch of very well-compensated entertainers complain about Donald Trump, then their ratings will continue to go down. I understand the early ratings for the Emmys are not good. So obviously people don't want to tune in to hear the likes of Alec Baldwin, et cetera, talk about Donald Trump.
Yeah, you're right. It's polarizing. It's assuming that most of your audience, that's what they want to hear. And you're right. I think in the end, the finals aren't out, but the latest ratings I saw was something like 11.2 million. It wasn't the lowest ever, but pretty low.
Yeah, I mean, if your objective is to get people to watch your show, right? And you've hired all these wonderful people to come on, and you have dance numbers, and you have people that really can't sing like Rachel Bloom and Stephen Colbert, who has a range of about 2.5 notes. I mean, do you think that people are really going to sit there for hour after hour of this? You just have to, you can't use it as a platform for a certain a grieved group that no longer has a political platform as they did with Obama to vent. You just can't do that. It's just Trump was elected nearly a year ago and everybody has moved on except a lot of very cranky entertainers.
I also think, I don't know how this changes because I think there's just a certain amount of ground they have to cover, but I don't think you're incorrect that at this point in the world of TV, 3 hours is too long. Like somehow you're going to have to trim it. And, you know, they do two nights of Creative Arts Emmys the weekend before. So they already added a night to that and they already are cramming a lot in. But I do think just 3 hours gets way too long.
Well, they don't have three total hours of categories. They have about 2 hours of categories. And the rest is just padding. Except, you know, the In Memoriam segment was very nice. And Christopher Jackson did a terrific job singing Always by Stevie Wonder. But the rest, all the other stuff, people don't want to see it. Just tell us who won.
Yeah, I think it's true. All right, so I'm going to go in the opposite direction of the Emmys telecast, and I'm definitely not going to go 3 hours. And we're going to start with the big awards up top and work our way backwards. So as anyone who cares knows by now, Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale won Best Drama. It also won awards for Elizabeth Moss. She was Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, Anne Dowd, Best Writing for the Pilot, Bruce Miller, Best Director, Reed Marino.
And Alexis Bledel, Best Guest Actress.
Yes, that's right. The weekend before, Alexis Bledel won for Best Guest. And then Hulu became the first streaming service to win Best Drama, beating Netflix to that honor, even though Netflix had three nominations in the Best Drama category with The Crown, House of Cards, and Stranger Things. The latter two were pretty much shut out. So, Robert...
Not to mention the money they spent promoting their shows.
Oh, yeah.
I think they rented the Hollywood Athletic Club for a month for Q&As with their various stars. And Amazon also trucked out all their sets to all their shows and had them on view in another large empty building in Los Angeles.
Yes.
So the streaming services broke the bank in terms of promotion this year, but Hulu had the best story. So in the end, it's about the best story. And what was more significant about The Handmaid's Tale is that it's a completely female-centric drama. And the last 8 or 9 Emmys have gone to male-driven and male-dominated programming, from Mad Men to Breaking Bad to Game of Thrones. So it's a sea change of enormous proportions as the series gets ready to start filming its season 2.
Yeah, those are all really good points. So did you think that, was your money on Handmaid's Tale?
I didn't think the Academy would actually go for it. I didn't think they would actually embrace the best story. I thought they would go for more crowd-pleasing choices. I thought The Handmaid's Tale was astounding in its execution with really terrific performances. And Anne Dowd's win was so satisfying to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Because she was equally brutal and sensitive. And, you know, someone like that who was not in the mainstream, not being heralded by the Hollywood Reporter every 15 minutes like a Game of Thrones trailer, is really someone who wins an award like that on merit alone and merit completely.
Yeah. Yeah, that I agree with the Anne Dowd win. And she was so obviously moved. And you can tell she's someone who's been doing it forever, not really noticed, but, you know, breaking out in The Leftovers, breaking out in Handmaid's Tale. It was quite lovely to see. And also Lizzie Moss, who had been nominated, that was her 9th nomination to finally win.
Correct. She was terrific, and she's proven herself to be someone who can do sci-fi or crime on top of the lake or period drama like Mad Men. She can be funny, she can be dramatic, she can be severe, she can play the underdog, she can play the striver, she can do many different kinds of roles, and she's early in her, 36, 33? I mean, she's just really getting started. She has an enormous range. And I guess the Academy figured we can't ignore her anymore. But she won for the role that made her the central figure, and that's fitting.
Now, you're very literary. Did you feel like Handmaid's Tale did justice to Margaret Atwood's novel?
Well, I didn't reread the book before I watched the show, but there were certain scenes, the book came back to me in certain scenes in the show. I remembered exact passages from the book. Certain people are quibbling about that, and Margaret Atwood is a producer, so she did sign off on some of the adaptations, but the spirit is the same, as far as I can tell. I don't know how you make it into a multi-year series, though.
Yeah, so I had read the book only before the series, so it was really fresh in my mind. I thought they did an amazing job adapting it. I don't want to spoil the novel's ending for anyone, but the show's is different. And I actually like the show's ending much better. So I will be interested to see what they do now, because they don't have a book to work off of. So that will be interesting.
Correct. There's always a challenge. And we saw what happened with the Game of Thrones people, how they got tied up in knots when they didn't have George R.R. Martin's brain to work with. So Bruce Miller has a daunting challenge ahead. But I have faith in him. He did a great job. Bruce Miller did a great job in finding Reed Morano, who was previously a cinematographer on several movies, to direct that pilot. Was a genius choice. It could have gone with, you know, the usual suspects, but he went for somebody different with a fresh perspective, and it paid off.
Yeah, that was a really nice win, too, I thought. And she's only 40. She's pretty young.
And it's the first win by a female director since Mimi Later directed an episode of ER.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, you know, it was a great win for, it was a great night for women advancing in the industry where they, you know, advancing in television where they can't advance in film anymore.
So this is not where I was going to go next, but since you said that, I'm going to go there, which is, let's talk about limited series. So, because speaking about highlighting women, you saw Big Little Lies almost sweep the night, not quite, but one. You know, best limited series, Nicole Kidman, Alexander Skarsgård, Laura Dern, all acting, Jean-Marc Vallée for directing. So what did you think about that Big Little Lies win? Were you happy with it? I know you were a big fan of FX's feud, Betty and Joan.
I thought Big Little Lies was fine. I thought it was entertaining, but I didn't think it was deep.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it had much to say. I mean, the domestic violence storyline was well done, but it was a secondary storyline in that series. I thought The Night Of had more to say about what was important about the world.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that Nicole Kidman feels that she's been shortchanged by Hollywood, but, you know, she was nominated for an Oscar last year. She's worth gazillions of dollars. And I really think this attempt on her part to cast herself as the head of the Oppression Olympics is a bit, it's a bit much. It's just a bit much. She's hardly oppressed.
I'm sorry.
You know, if we want to talk oppression, let's go to the third world. Let's not talk about Nicole Kidman and her various stylists, dresses, hairdos, facial treatments.
Oh, hilarious.
And her complete lack of work, even though she's white, blonde, and has four movies coming out at any given time.
Yeah, it is true. She's having a difficult time finding roles for women in Hollywood.
Yeah, she, here's a woman who hasn't worked in 15 years. This is not who Nicole Kidman is.
Yeah. Tell me, though, why, like, what argument would you make for another, which, if it wasn't Big Little Lies, who did you think should have won and why?
I thought The Night Of should have won instead of Big Little Lies.
Okay.
Because it talked about a crime. It talked about what was happening to Islamic people living in New York City, and how a complete, someone in the complete wrong place at the wrong time could be arrested and imprisoned without any voice whatsoever. I mean, I realized that Celeste in Big Little Lies was in a very compromising domestic situation, but she was living in freaking Monterey with an ocean view, and those women had options. The guy in jail on The Night That had no voice, he had no options at all.
Well, at least Riz Ahmed won, and that was an impressive win because he beat two Oscar winners, Robert De Niro and Jeffrey Rush, and an Oscar nominee, Benedict Cumberbatch. So I thought that was that was maybe not surprising because I know he did a great job in The Night Of, but a big win for him.
Yeah, it was a great part. You know, the De Niro part was not a great part because Richard Dreyfuss had played it before and better. And De Niro was just De Niro. You know, there comes a point in every De Niro performance he just starts saying, dropping F-bombs all over the place, and you feel, oh my God, it's Jake LaMotta, but he's thinner. So that's what happened there. And Jeffrey Rush, I don't think he was ingenious enough.
Mm.
Genius was really about the younger actor who played Einstein, and his name was Johnny. I interviewed him. Why can't I remember his name? I can't remember his name. God forgive me.
But in any case,
he was terrific. Yeah. He was the guy who, but the younger Albert Einstein was excellent, and he was overlooked because he wasn't, you know, he's not part. You've got to be part of that game where they're talking about you. The Hollywood Reporter is having yet another roundtable, yet another luncheon, yet another, you know, ad support driven HBO thing where, you know, Nicole Kidman, how I suffered, you know, whatever.
Well, I also think that that's a good point in that if you look at, go over to the limited series actress category, that was four Oscar winners: Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, Jessica Lange, Susan Sarandon. And then you had Carrie Coons and Felicity Huffman. So, I mean, it's sort of like, how do you not nominate these Oscar winners?
Well, the reason that you have to nominate them is because people who work in front of the film camera, they know a lot more about how to get a performance over in different ways than actors who work on television. It's just something I've seen throughout the years, and they're just more creative in so many ways that TV actors are not. Also, you know, the Emmy Awards are turning into the junior Oscars
or maybe
the senior Oscars, because more and more now, with the success that Reese Witherspoon has enjoyed and Nicole Kidman as the head of the Professional Olympics, you will see more and more people in their age group coming over. Now that Ryan Murphy's won his Emmys for Jessica Lange and Kathy Bates, you're going to see a whole other generation of actresses, but younger, 20 years, 10 years younger than Kathy Bates and Jessica Lange, coming over to work in television on a regular basis.
Well, I mean, if you also
Julianne Moore will be in a show with like 18 months.
Well, you just saw Naomi Watts do a show for Netflix that didn't really do anything, but...
Correct, but you know she was into it, right? Because she's 50, so or she's in her late 40s. So I think what's happening is all the people at the agencies are having little chats with their clients saying, you know, this is what the future looks like. And if you want to work, this is where you need to go.
Yeah. I mean, well, you also consider, so look at younger actresses, but what kind of showcase The Handmaid's Tale was for Elizabeth Moss. And that was a very strategic choice on the part of her representation. They weren't about to put her into anything that was going to require a big commitment out of her that they didn't think was headed to awards. So, and it panned out perfectly. It's always somewhat of a risk in Hollywood, but that was done very specifically to get her where they wanted her to be. And I think The Crown, although you saw Lithgow win, but Claire Foy was amazing in that. And that was a beautiful production and also an incredible showcase for Claire Foy, who just got cast in a Girl of movie. So, I mean, TV is doing a lot to, the line between TV and film is almost not there anymore.
Well, it's not there anymore because there are, especially for actresses, because there are no major roles for actresses in movies until the fall.
So we start getting into Oscar bait.
Yeah, but because for 9 months out of the year, you can't find a major role for an actress in a movie. So that's when you watch TV, and that's when we saw all this acting between, you know, last December when The Crown came on through now.
Right. Right. Yeah,
that's when we saw all these great performances. They came on starting with The Crown in December, Big Little Lies, Feud, Handmaid's Tale. That's when we started seeing all this stuff when you weren't going to see all the franchise movies that have bombed.
That's true. But I also think it's interesting because so The Crown came out in December and Handmaid's Tale came out in April. And in a way, I think that helped Handmaid's Tale because that show came out much closer to Emmy voting time.
Yes, it did. Plus, it was so startlingly bold and it was unflinching. Like, if you went down that journey, you went all the way with those girls. And it was just so horrifying there was nothing else like it. There's never been a TV show like The Handmaid's Tale, ever. Well,
and the timing on it, I mean, again, we don't want to make it about Trump, but the timing on Handmaid's Tale was pretty fortunate for that production.
Correct. And not to mention the oppression against women around the world. It was the right show at the right time.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of another oppressed woman, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, really deeply not
what
oppressed.
What a terrible life she has.
Yeah, terrible life. So she won her sixth straight Emmy for Veep, playing Selena Meyer. And Veep, to me, this was an upset, even though Veep was really the, you know, the 800-pound gorilla. But Veep won Best Comedy. I really, like, I would have put $100,000 down that Atlanta was going to win. So what did you think was going to happen in comedy?
I thought that Atlanta was going to win, but in recent weeks, people were talking about how great the writing on Veep still was. So I sense it was shifting. Plus, I don't think Donald Glover goes out there and charms people in the way that Julia Louis-Dreyfus has clearly the enormous affection of the industry where she's worked since, you know, Saturday Night Live, you know.
Yeah.
The people that have been, that she's been working with since she was a young woman have watched her talent blossom, you know, and I do think she should withdraw her name.
Yeah.
You know, Candace Bergen and Oprah and a lot of people who won Emmys repeatedly did withdraw their names to give other people a chance. Obviously, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's ego still needs this.
I think it's hard to not go for the six if you think you can get it.
I guess, but...
Yeah, I understand. I do think... I mean, I watched the season of Veep, and I will say...
It's hilarious.
It didn't lose a beat. Like, it didn't change... It was a great season. And I thought at the beginning, like, I don't know, this show might have jumped the shark. It might be West Wing season 7, where they send everybody out into the world and no one's together. But it's still genius.
It's just hilarious, and the supporting cast is really sharp, and the jokes are hysterical.
Well, that's another show too where the timing is just so right for it.
Right.
So, I mean, and they do their best to sort of avoid the current political climate, but they still benefit from it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess if all our awards now are going to go to any sort of production that, and you know, spoofs comments on Donald Trump, then you know, that will get old fast.
Well, that takes me right into the next one, which is Saturday Night Live. So Saturday Night Live came in with 22 nominations. It was tied with Westworld as the most nominated show. Westworld really flamed out at the Emmys, but Saturday Night Live ended up, I believe, winning the most of any show with 9. And so you saw last night, you saw Kate McKinnon and Alec Baldwin winning. You saw John Roy King for directing. It was like his 7th in a row or something. And then the weekend before, you saw Dave Chappelle and Melissa McCarthy win for guests. So Saturday Night Live, and it won obviously for Outstanding Variety Sketch Show.
Right.
So that's a show. I mean, again, it took everything that was going on politically last year and just went crazy with it. So it's even kind of silly for me to ask you this, but do you think Saturday Night Live deserved all that?
Completely.
Yeah.
They did their job, which is to comment on the times in which we're living. And finding Kate McKinnon and then Melissa McCarthy's Sean Spicer going through New York City on that podium was one of the funniest things on television in the last 5 years.
Melissa McCarthy, Sean Spicer. I have to say, I probably still watch that like once a week.
I mean, it's so funny. It's like so relentlessly and crazily and unexpectedly funny. You just can't stop laughing. And she pulled it off. She was brilliant.
Melissa McCarthy doing that, she's so fearless. She never breaks. She'll go as far as she has to. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why she's Melissa McCarthy and other people are not.
Yeah. So I think the other thing, though, about Saturday Night Live that's so amazing is Lorne Michaels.
Yeah, he's having a renaissance. He has really great people now. And he's got everyone working really fast, really great. They're all in sync all the time. And anybody who comes on seems to fit right in these days. So that's another bonus.
Yeah. No, it's Saturday Night Live. I mean, I think I can't remember how long that show's been on. I want to say 40, 45 years. And I think
almost
he's been there. He's been there the whole time. So that's, it's just amazing to be at it that long and still have it all be as sharp as it is.
Still be inspired and still see it and still appreciate its voice and its purpose.
So another sort of similar area, but the variety talk category. So they just split off variety sketch and variety talk a couple of years ago, which I'm glad they did because it's really kind of two different animals. So, and variety talk has gotten really competitive. This year we saw John Oliver last week tonight with John Oliver win. Would that have been your pick?
No.
That was a very pregnant pause. Why?
I think he's vulgar, and I think he uses a lot of really disgusting language to appeal to millennials. I realize that he's smart, but I don't think that's why you go to Oxford. Just so you can say blowjob and all the other words that he feels he has to say to appeal to millennials and get all the viral hits that he gets. He's pandering, and he covers it up with the posh accent. I'm not fooled.
So I think one thing I did love at the Emmys, the Colbert and the Jimmy Kimmel little moment where they have the drink. I just like how those late night guys sort of like they take the Mickey out of each other, but you can tell they also really like and respect each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know it's a great team. I just think that that's the way you have to, if that's the language you're going to use to get your audience, it's just desperate. I don't know.
I mean, I guess the flip side is he moved to HBO from Comedy Central and it gives him the freedom to do that. So maybe you feel like, well, I need to take advantage of that freedom.
I get it, but is that our definition of freedom, is saying, you know, fuck 40 times in an hour? If that's our definition of freedom, we were not really free.
And that's the takeaway quote from this.
But that's look at HBO. I mean, you watch half an hour of the deuce and everyone says that word every 25 seconds. It's part of the it has to be part of the contract, right? You know, it's like, I can't, you know, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. Like, that's a James Franco scene. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. Like, he says that 50 times in one episode of The Deuce. Like, really? Is that written in a script? You hired someone to write that? Really? You call that writing? Really?
So you're saying that's lazy.
I think it's lazy. I think it's unimaginative. And I think it's pandering.
All right. So we'll talk about this in the next episode we do called Paige and Robert Talk About the Deuce. But the Deuce has just premiered. So
a show which everybody in New York hates. Anybody who ever covered the prostitution scene in the 70s from this paper. Okay. Anyway, back to the Emmys.
True. Robert does work for the New York Post, just to remind everyone. All right, back to the Emmys. I think the question of diversity is interesting in the way the Emmys addresses it. In a way, I feel like they're a little like, look at us, we're diverse. On the flip side, you know, we saw Donald Glover win two Emmys for directing and Best Actor in a Comedy. We mentioned Riz Ahmed winning for The Night Of. Sterling K. Brown won for This Is Us. Aziz Ansari and Lena Waithe won for writing on Netflix's Master of None. And there's probably more that I'm missing. But do you feel like the way Emmy showcases diversity is appropriate? Or do you think they should do it differently? Or what do you think?
I thought it was pretty okay. As a viewer, I'm getting tired of all the people on stage who are enjoying enormous success. And obviously making tons of money, drawing a line in the sand between their race and mine.
So elaborate on that.
Well, I didn't think Sterling was going to go here, but he did go there by saying that he pointed to Justin Hartley and Chrissy Metz in the audience saying, you guys are the best white family an actor could ever have. Just like, really? I mean, last year you were like the humble winner from The People versus O.J. Simpson. Now you're drawing attention to yourself for your race. You went to Stanford. You don't have to do that.
But I feel like you're a big fan of Sterling in general.
He's a terrific actor. I just don't think you have to go there. They just gave you an award, and it wasn't because of your race. It was because you were moving to an audience in your scenes. They didn't give you that prize because of your background. They right. gave it because of your ability to create a character and interpret that character over a series of 18 episodes. And if you're going to make it, if you're going to draw attention to yourself because of your racial background, then you're going to make it to make it look like the only reason you got the prize was because of your race. And that is, you're just, and you're fooling yourself and you're fooling your audience.
Yeah, see, that's an interesting take. I think it's always, you're always sort of walking that line because it's, you want to honor diversity in all its forms, but you do also want to say you're winning this award because of what you achieved.
Right. So why can't you just accept the award graciously and be on your way without drawing, you know, following in this, you know, tiresome identity politics mode where you walk, every room you walk into is a series of you checking off these boxes.
Yeah. No, I think it's a tricky issue. I do think it's a little bit like flag waving on the Emmys part, especially versus the Oscars, but I mean, better to see the diversity and talk about it than not.
Right. And it's great to see everyone working, but you know, if it's just going to be about, it's going to seem like a quota system after a while.
Yeah. So were there any,
you know, the Oscars by contrast has no one in being considered for best actress who's a minority, which is shameful. You know, it's like the cast of Enchanted April all over again, like blonde white actresses. Like, is this the best you can do after last year? The answer is they don't care. So, you know, it's great that television is more cognizant of writing stories where there are more diverse characters. But diversity can't be the goal. The goal has to be good. It's the best storytelling you can have. And the storytelling needs to be inclusive. But it still has to be the best storytelling, not the most diverse storytelling.
I think that's why, like, for example, Atlanta is a good example, Master of None. Insecure was not nominated, but that's another good example where you just have people from also different backgrounds telling their stories, not to be cliche, but telling them authentically and letting people see those stories. I think that kind of... it's all cliche what I'm going to say, but that kind of auteur-driven television where you really let that person draw from their experience and create their vision goes a long way to showcasing that.
Correct.
Yeah, so you just go, it's not so much, I mean, it is about performances, but it's also about who are you letting come to the table?
Exactly.
Who are you working with?
Television's doing a better job than movies in that regard.
Yeah, I think a much better job.
A much better, there's no comparison. Yeah. There's no comparison, that's why TV is the better medium right now and has been for several years.
Do you think it's the more diverse medium? And I don't even mean that in terms of race or color, but in terms of offerings. I mean, there's just there's so many different things, different kinds of things you can watch on TV. You can watch better things on FX. You can watch The Voice on NBC. You can watch travel logs all day. I mean, there's anything.
Right. And Netflix is starting a Polish language, its first Polish language series. That to me is true diversity. When you're using different languages like Narcos, then you're really entertaining people from around the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a global medium. Movies are not global.
Well, they try to be.
But they're not. They're not. They sell one kind of franchise film around the world. We don't get as many foreign films as we used to when I was a kid. You know, actors in foreign language films are rarely acknowledged for their work these days. In the 60s and the 70s, they were acknowledged all the time.
Yeah.
Sophia Loren being one example, who won an Oscar for acting in Italian in 1961.
It's very rare that I have a conversation with you where we don't start talking about movies in the 40s or the 50s or the 60s.
Or, for example, Ingrid Bergman nominated for 1982 for Autumn Sonata, and then she was acting in Swedish after acting in English language films from, you know, the 40s onward. You know, I'm just saying, like, Hollywood movie making is not open-minded movie making.
This is, again, a separate conversation, but I think with movies, it's become so financial that it's more like you're creating an investment. You're not really creating a piece of art.
true. It's exactly. It's only about commerce. It's never about the cultural benefit.
But I think flip side with TV is, I mean, sometimes it's about commerce, but in a lot of these cases, it is about creating a piece of art or telling a specific story or letting an auteur's vision shine through. It's not about how much money am I going to make on this.
Correct.
All right. So are there any other categories that we didn't talk about that like just stuck out for you? One for me is I was happy that John Lithgow won for The Crown. He played Winston Churchill. I thought he was incredible in that role.
He was very good in that role. And Gary Oldman's playing Winston Churchill in a movie this fall. So
you can do a drug.
Winston Churchill's the guy. I don't think John Lithgow should have thanked Winston Churchill or whatever he did. He quoted Winston Churchill as if what Winston Churchill was saying was about the Emmys. It's like, okay, again, you have your prize. Go backstage and have a good time. Just like stop linking dead international statesmen to your performance.
Any other final thoughts about last night's Emmy Awards?
I think the comedy categories need a lot of beefing up. I just think it's the same 12 people every year. I don't think the networks are developing and streaming services are developing comedies that are really worthy of being nominated. I think they really have to work on that. It's not a problem among the drama series or the limited miniseries, anything like that. It's just the comedy stuff is the same folks every year. And it's dull. Like the comedy supporting actors, it was Ty Burrell, Tony Hale, Alec Baldwin, all of whom have won in that category.
Yeah.
Plus a couple of others. It's just like, all right, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because on one hand, if you talk to people, they'll say, you know, comedy is sort of the most diverse, meaning different kinds of comedy than it probably has ever been. But you're right, like broadcast network comedy is really having a hard time finding shows that work really well. Like you have the Big Bang Theory, you have Modern Family that both still do well in the ratings, but they're both 10 years old. And it's just very hard for network comedy to break out and not feel cookie cutter. I mean, there are some exceptions, I would say, Black-ish, Goldberg, Speechless, but it's still very tough. And then on cable, you have all these tiny little shows that serve very niche audiences. And I think that's true for streaming services too.
Yeah, they're not having a good time of it. And I don't know why, but I mean, I could think of a few reasons, but.
Like what reasons? Share them with us.
They have the same hacky writers going from one show to another, and they're not original. They're just like, get some different voices in there. Get some different voices in there.
I do think, I mean, like Insecure, I mentioned, I think Atlanta, I think Master of None. Louis wasn't there this year, but that's another one. I think Better Things. There are, You're the Worst. I think there are comedies out there that's doing this, but people aren't watching them in mass, so they aren't getting the kind of notice. That's one. Two, I think, like let's look at Big Little Lies. It just gets so much attention because it's got Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman. And so to get that kind of attention, it's another reason you hire movie stars.
Exactly. Exactly. But it wasn't always that way.
No, I think it's interesting, though. And maybe also going back to
Emmys are not the Oscars, the junior Oscars or the senior Oscars.
Yeah. But I also think like going back to talking about Veep winning for the third year in a row, I think it goes back to that as well, that Veep, you know, that's why Veep wins 3 years, because Veep is an excellent show. Yes. And
Veep has no competition. That's why it wins.
Yeah.
She has no competition. She wins because she has no real competition.
There is not another comedy role for a woman that compares to that Selena Meyer role. There's just nothing close.
No. That's why she keeps winning. So just make it the annual Julia Louis-Dreyfus Award and just stop.
Well, next year's Veep's last year, so maybe that'll be it. I think everybody would agree that comedy is a little bit, especially on broadcast, that comedy is struggling.
Yeah, it's just, it's not funny.
All right. Any other final thoughts about last night's awards?
I really think it should be a 2-hour show at the most. And I realize the networks want to sell this block of time, this primetime block of time. And I realize that's a very old business model and they're fighting for it. But I don't think in 5 years people will watch them at all.
All right, I'll send that note onto the Academy. All right.
Really don't. The Academy makes money. Pete Hammond told me all about this. For those creative artists, those creative arts weekend ceremonies mm-hmm. that precede the broadcast, everyone has to pay to go to those. So the Academy is making all this dough hand over fist even before you get to the telecast.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about the business model of the TV Academy. It's interesting also how the Emmys, I mean, as a business, you talked about this already with Netflix doing that giant step, that whole thing where people could go see Netflix shows for a month ahead of voting, and Amazon did it too, and with For Your Consideration campaigns. How much money is spent just around the marketing of shows for Emmy consideration has gotten crazy.
It's so out of control. Just, there are banners hanging off those, like, the lamppost on La Cienega. That's a Pete Hammond that you drive and there are like banners hanging everywhere.
Oh, it's true. I mean, it was especially insane this year. So that's just become an industry on its own. And then I think also having that Emmy seal of approval, like if you're Hulu and you just went for Handmaid's Tale, that's such a seal of approval for people to come subscribe to Hulu and watch Handmaid's Tale. So it's just Emmys have become part of the business model, which that's great for the Academy. It's a little, it does make everything like hyped up and feel like, I mean, at the end of the day, it's television. So that's awesome that you got an Emmy, but let's put it in perspective.
Yeah, the Emmy doesn't bring in the millions of dollars to a box office revenue that an Academy Award does. It doesn't change the world. And it might not even change your career. You might get other television parts and you might keep yourself going for a while, but it doesn't have the same impact as the Oscars. People want it to. There are a lot of people invested in it, and particularly the press. But I don't think it has the same impact.
All right. I'm going to leave it there. Robert, thank you so very much for your time and for being here.
Thank you, Paige. And it was just lovely to see
you
this summer.
It's always hilarious. And it's always always a mention of an actress from the 1940s. So I appreciate that. And some singing. All right. Until
Rachel
next year.
Bloom really can sing. I don't know what that was about.
All right. Until next year's Emmys. Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax VDA. Laferne Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax VDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCire and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow Laferne at Laferne Cusack. Follow Promax VDA at Promax VDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxvda.org and subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. A big thanks to our friends at TiVo for sponsoring this week's episode of the Daily Brief podcast. TiVo's Promo Optimizer is a cloud-based tool that allocates and executes your promotional inventory across network brands. Check it out at business.tivo.com. TiVo knows promos.